This podcast contains more common sense than most people can cope with. If you can't handle the truth, stop listening now. The conservative revolution starts here. This is your weekly dose of common sense with Corey Bernardi.
Hello everyone, this is Corey Bernardi and welcome to another weekly dose of common sense podcast. Great to have you tuning in and I want to say thank you. Thank you for recommending your family and friends and your frenemies listen to this podcast, because our listenership is growing every single week and it's only because of your contribution to it. So stay in touch, share this on your social media links, go to the conservatives.org.au website and get involved, because the common sense community needs to grow and we need to get more common sense back into Parliament. And this podcast will help bring common sense back to Canberra. You can be part of it. And speaking of common sense, were you aware of the Hayne Royal Commission report into the banks? Made for very poor reading, and I'm guess a lot of you have heard about it on the news, but 76 recommendations highlighting just how badly the banks have behaved. They've been charging fees for services that were never received. Dead people have been charged fees. Something like $850 million worth of compensation was estimated would be payable simply because these fees have been gouged out of everyday consumers and the dead. And the bank sort of brushed it off as administrative oversight. Well, I'm not buying that. And I'll tell you why I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it because they made the same sort of claim when the Commonwealth Bank was busted for allowing hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even billions of dollars worth of money laundering by allowing cash to be deposited in their ATMs without reference to the credit reporting agencies or AUSTRAC and those things. And it's estimated that hundreds of millions, maybe even more, of dollars were deposited by drug dealers, funders of terrorism into these accounts. And they knew it was going on for years. And they did nothing to stop it because it was good business for the bank. They paid a massive fine, but the Commonwealth Bank didn't really pay it. Their shareholders paid it. And ipso facto, anyone with an account at the Commonwealth Bank paid it through increased charges and fees. They say they didn't increase them, but they get their money back. Their profit's still going up, aren't they? Anyway, also the Banking Royal Commission also found out that superannuation had been riddled with unaccountability and a whole bunch of poor disclosure. And I read one report that 75% of superannuation files were deemed not to be compliant. He ripped into the administrators, APRA and AFIC, for not doing the right thing. The financial industry regulators have just been missing in action. And so there's got to be changes all across the board. Also got stuck into the mortgage brokers. You expect that to change, because no longer are there going to be money for nothing for a mortgage broker. Because unless you know this, they get a chunk of money up front from the bank. You don't pay it, or you do really, but they get a chunk of money up front and then they get a trailing commission, which Kenneth Hayne said is money for nothing. That's going to change. And so that'll change the way, I'm sure, that many do business. But the results of this have highlighted just how bad sections of the corporate community can be. And this is what I keep coming back to. I believe in capitalism. I believe that people should be able to make decisions for themselves. But people need to be able to understand the sorts of transactions that they're engaging in. And one of the greatest things we can do for anyone in this country is to give them or allow them, provide them with the ability to develop good money habits. Most people, I regret, don't understand money. They don't understand superannuation. We're going to talk a bit about that later on. They don't understand superannuation. They don't understand the principles of compound interest. And they want to blame everyone else because they've borrowed too much or they've spent too much. Unless you develop good money habits early, you are never going to be wise to the scams and the scandals and the overcharging that is going on. Now, I'm not going to excuse the banks, but if we're serious about redressing some problems in this country and making a difference to everyone's lives, then we should be investing in financial education right from grade 1 or 2 or 3. So that when a child graduates from high school, they will understand how money works, and they will have developed good money habits, and their future will be changed immeasurably. I wrote a children's book about this many years ago. It's called The Money Tree. If you get in touch, I'll send you a copy. Corey@coreybernardi.com. And haven't we got a good podcast for you today? I reckon it's going to be a cracker, because I met a chap on the weekend who is an outstanding candidate, someone who I think would make an exemplary parliamentarian, and he happens to be running for the Conservative Party. I'm going to tell you who that is in just a moment. And I'm going to pose the question, have we reached peak stupid yet? I mean, every week there's a new piece of stupidness, but I think we might have reached peak stupid. Listen on, tell me what you think. Someone's asked a question about income tax and direct benefits for retirement. So we're going to talk about income tax, not in that dry, awful way, but from a historical sense, because you'll be appalled at what's happened with income tax in this country. And of course, there's your say. 19 minutes of fascinating insights into what you're thinking and what I'm thinking. So strap yourself in. This is your weekly dose of Common Sense podcast. I'm Corey Bernardi, and it's great to have you with us.
In an age of deals, excuses and shortcuts, it's time for a better way. Australia could really do with a new brand of politics. Someone that will say what they mean and mean what they say. A party that will never quit, never give up. And I know Corey Bernardi and his team of Conservatives will always fight for you. They will fight for affordable and reliable electricity. They will fight for stronger borders. And they will stand up to political correctness and defend our Australian values. Australia together. The Australian Conservatives can bring conviction back to Canberra.
Authorised by C. Bernardi for the Australian Conservatives, Adelaide.
Welcome to the podcast of the only party at this year's election promising to bring back common sense. This is your weekly dose of common sense.
Dear friends in the common sense community, you know, I'm very proud of the candidates that the Australian Conservatives have pre-selected for the upcoming Senate election. We have a standout bunch of people. But last weekend, I was in Sydney for a function in relation to the New South Wales state election. And I got to tell you, I was so impressed with a couple of our upper house candidates. They're all good candidates. They have a long list. But two of them spoke, a chap named Ben Irawan, who's an extraordinary man. But the leader of the upper house ticket in New South Wales is a chap by the name of Dr. Greg Walsh. Now, he's a lawyer. Don't hold that against him. He's an author, a university lecturer, and a dedicated conservative activist. He's a passionate advocate for the importance of defending freedom of speech and religious liberty. He promotes limited government. He supports families. He wants to see improved community safety, reduce energy costs, and ensure that our immigration and refugee programs work in the national interest. How can you argue with that? He's published a whole bunch of articles promoting conservative views in journals and newspapers, including The Australian, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Conversation, Quadrant, and The Spectator. So even the lefties on The Conversation and The Sydney Morning Herald have him on because he's so good. He graduated from the Australian National University with undergraduate degrees in science and law. From Sydney University, he got a Master of Laws degree, and from Curtin University, he got a doctorate on the topic of how religious schools should be regulated under anti-discrimination legislation. As a professional legal practitioner, his experience includes working with medical negligence firms, the New South Wales Office of the Director of Public Prosecution, and the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in Geneva. He has been a solid and devoted member of the Australian Conservatives who joined us the very day that were established on the 7th of February. And he's played a key role in both our campaign in Bennelong, which was our very first campaign, and he served on the New South Wales executive of the Australian Conservatives. He is tall, he's a good-looking rooster, he's a champion bloke, and he has stellar credentials to champion the cause of conservatism and common sense in the New South Wales upper house. He is representative of the types of candidates we've put in place right around the country. That when you vote for an Australian Conservative candidate, you'll be voting for
for the cream of the crop. And that's what I ask you to do, whether in New South Wales or in the federal election. Look for the Australian Conservatives' name and know, vote with confidence, that common sense will be represented and your interests will be represented should we be successful. And we can only be successful, and people like Dr. Greg Walsh can only get into the New South Wales Parliament, if we get off our collective backsides and help them and vote for them and spread the Conservative message. That's what we all need to do. I need your help to do. And by listening to this podcast and sharing it with your family and friends, you can get Dr. Greg Walsh and a whole range of other candidates just like him elected to the Parliament.
If you think politics needs more common sense and less clowns, you've come to the right place. This is your weekly dose of common sense.
Thanks for tuning in. This is your weekly dose of common sense, and aren't we sorely in need of it? Every week, I just wonder whether we've finally reached peak stupid. And then every week, I'm disappointed, thinking an even more stupid idea comes up and gets some traction. And one of them, one of the dumbest things that I've ever heard, has been a taxpayer-funded gender and disaster pod. And where else but in the People's Republic of Victoria, the progressive capital that is identifying us or separating us or isolating us into little tribes all against each other. I want to quote, "Support training of emergency management employees and volunteers to better understand discrimination based on gender and sexual identity in the context of emergencies." They go on. "We're going to employ professional support to update household guides for emergency preparedness with a gender lens to ensure the different needs of men, women, and everyone of diverse gender and sexual identities, including LGBTI people." Oh, what about the Q people? I'm adding that. They've been forgotten. "But including LGBTI people so that they're covered in preparing for an emergency." Are you for real? Do you really think the lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, intersex, whatever, the other alphabet mafia, do you really think they're that different that they need a special group of people to help them decide what to do in an emergency? Because this is what they say. "Men may experience peer pressure to stay and fight the fire or defend their property. And women may be pressured to play roles of nurturers, putting their own needs last. Such messages have omitted consideration of the LGBTI community." Have you ever heard such nonsense? What they're basically saying is that men are unable to make decisions for themselves, women are unable to make decisions for themselves, and LGBTI alphabet mafia people are unable to decide what they want to do either. And lo and behold, the Gender and Disaster Pod, it's an initiative of two Victorian women's health organisations. Notice that, women's health organisations, not LGBTIQ alphabet health organisations. Women. The Women's Health Goulburn North East and Women's Health in the North, working in partnership with Monash University Disaster Resilience Initiative. Have you ever heard such garbage? The GADPOD, don't you like that acronym? The GADPOD was formally established in 2015 to promote an understanding of the role played by gender in survivor responses to natural disaster and to embed these insights into emergency management practice. That's your taxpayer funds at work. If you don't think we've reached peak stupid, there's not much hope. I'll be back.
Bringing you more common sense in half an hour than a whole year of their ABC. This is your weekly dose of common sense.
Welcome back. Let's have a little conversation about tax. No, don't turn off. Stay tuned, because it was prompted by one of the common sense community. Brian wrote to me, he said, "Dear Corey, could you tell me if it's true that quite a few years ago, a tax was put on workers to fund their retirement? I also heard the money was lost in an investment. Is any of this true?" Well, Brian, I didn't know the answer to that. So I went to the interweb of things and I had a look around. And it's important to understand a little bit of history about Australia's tax system, and then we'll deal with something specific to your question. At the end of the 19th century, before Federation, each of the six Australian colonies had distinct taxation systems. They were reliant on customs and excise duties, and the design of these tax systems was all about administrative concerns. It had nothing to do with equity or efficiency or principle. It was designed to raise money for the administration of the colony. Plus, they were designed to act as trade barriers between the colonies. And in 1901, when Australia became a federation, we saw the removal of all duties on that interstate trade. At the time of federation, Australia's tax to GDP ratio was around 5%. Around 5%, so about 25% today. And this ratio remained reasonably constant until the introduction of a federal income tax in 1915. And this was used to fund Australia's war effort. And between the two world wars, government expenditure and tax revenues grew significantly, unsurprisingly. And by the beginning of the Second World War, Australia's tax take was over 11% of GDP. So it had doubled in the time of the wars, and it was still less than half of what it is today. Between 1915 and 1942, income taxes were levied at both the state and federal level. This was complex, it was inequitable taxation of income across states and so forth, and so Second World War saw fundamental changes to our taxation system. In 1942, income tax was consolidated, that's a dangerous thing, it was consolidated within the purview of the federal government to increase revenue as a wartime measure. They're always hungry for your money. As a result, the state's tax base was reduced and replaced by federal government grants. They still are reliant on federal government grants. By the end of the war, taxation revenue had grown to over 22% of GDP. 22% of GDP, and government just gets bigger. The further increase in taxation largely reflected Australia's involvement in the war and the introduction of government support programs such as the widow's pension in 1942 and unemployment relief in 1944. Tax revenue started to fall in the middle of the 20th century, and by 1963, the tax take was around 18% of GDP. Listeners, that's where it should be today. Anyway, it then increased significantly between 73 and 75, thank you, Gough, largely as a result of increased funding for social programs that have got us to where we are today. But, back to your question, Brian. You have to go back to Chifley and the changes he made back in 1942 and 43. Now, we know that during World War II, the Australian government inflated the currency, borrowed massive amounts of money, and when Labor took power in 1941, there was still a budget shortfall that needed to be sorted. And just like politicians today, when you're in opposition, you oppose previous government taxes, particularly those levied on low-income earners. And once in government, the new Prime Minister, John Curtin, doubled down. With the first uniform tax case came before the High Court, which this effectively eliminated the state income tax in favour of the Commonwealth tax, Curtin promised the electorate that the Commonwealth's new power would not be used as an excuse to raise income taxes. Gee, where have you heard this stuff before? Labor's no tax pledge was unsustainable. And that became clear to Curtin and his treasurer, Chifley, and they decided the government had to close the huge revenue expenditure gap. Now, rather than cut spending, they decided not to print some money because inflation was already a problem. So they thought, we'll put some additional tax on. And some of that would necessarily hit those on incomes below £400 per year, which is a relatively low income earner at the time. Now, the solution devised by Chifley was an example of policy misdirection, according to the ABC. For the previous decade, Parliament had been debating whether to introduce a national social security scheme. One of the key questions of this debate was whether it should be funded by general taxation, as the Labor Party traditionally favoured, or individual contributions, as the Conservative Lyons government had proposed in the late 30s. So, when Chifley announced they would increase income taxes on rich and poor alike, they also announced a national welfare fund alongside it. This is for you, Brian. The National Welfare Fund would fund welfare measures like pensions, unemployment relief, child endowments, even healthcare. The fund is often seen as the launch of Australia's welfare state. Good intentions now slowly devouring us. Now, unlike a contributory scheme, the fund would be financed by the new income tax increases, and there were two tricks. Firstly, Chifley said the revenue from the tax increase was specifically earmarked for the National Welfare Fund. Thus, Labor wasn't breaking its promise not to increase the burden on low-income earners. That's a bit of political sophistry, if ever there's one. And secondly, said most of the great new social services weren't to start until after the war. Cabinet agreed that only 5 million of the estimated 40 would be directed towards immediate social spending. Money is fungible. The rest could quietly be used for the war effort. Now, doesn't that tell you everything you need to know? That politics doesn't seem to have changed? No new taxes. We will not be increasing taxes. The taxes we take will be earmarked for particular programs, whether it be roads from your fuel excise levy or an increase in tax to sustain welfare and so on and so on, and pensions and quarantined. And it all just goes into general revenue, and the whole show goes on and on and on. And government gets bigger. People recognise they can make demands of it. Fewer people pay tax, and those that are left wear the burden of it. Now, Brian, that answers your question. It's true. A tax was put on workers to fund social welfare, including their retirement. Was the money lost? No, it wasn't put in the place it was meant to be. It wasn't quarantined. It wasn't segregated. That's why an accumulation scheme is better. It was merely commandeered into general revenue. So it wasn't lost as an investment, unless you think you invested in your politicians and they've squandered it. Maybe we're onto something there. Now, lest the ABC fact-checking unit get onto me, I got to say, I got that information from the treasury.gov.au website, plus their ABC. I'm not sure which one I should trust more. Let me know what you think. Corey at coreybernardi.com.
Keep listening. This is your weekly dose of common sense.
It's time. Gee, I wish I could do that like Bruce Buffer. If you don't know who Bruce Buffer is, Google him. MMA fans will certainly know. He's the ring announcer in the greatest sport on earth at the moment, which is mixed martial arts. I'm sure that'll prompt a couple of calls. Send them in or emails. Corey at coreybernardi.com. Jeff has done just that. He says, with all the talk of Bill Shorten becoming the next PM, it really scares me. So what do we need to do? If there's a message, I can tell all my friends. Well, Jeff, there is a message. You've got to vote for the Australian Conservatives in the Senate. Doesn't matter who forms government, whether it's a spineless Liberal Party or a union-emboldened leftist machine like the Labor Party. We can fix things. And the way to shape policy outcomes, the way to make things better, is to have a block of principled conservative senators in the Senate. So vote for the government of your choice, vote for the candidate you prefer, and then vote for the Australian Conservatives in the Senate, no matter where you are. Max says, keep up the good fight, maintain the rage. Apart from helping to vote Gough Whitlam to power, I've always been a conservative voter. Hey, one mistake. But I'm concerned the coalition have moved too far to the left. Do you think the number of Conservatives going independent because of the government's lack of concern over climate change is a concern? If the government were to come out and announce plans for a new coal-fired or nuclear power station, would this bring disenchanted Conservatives such as me back to the fold? You know, Max, thank you for the support, mate. I appreciate it. And thank you for admitting that one aberration, the Gough Whitlam. But I suspect you're not Robinson Crusoe there. I don't think that so-called Conservatives, and they're not, running for the independents is any indication about the Liberal Party at all. Most of these people, most of them, are very left-wing individuals. And I've seen some that say they're lifelong Liberals that previously have admitted never voting Liberal in their life. This is a convenience of an orchestrated campaign, I have to say. There are suggestions they're linked to GetUp. There are suggestions that Malcolm Turnbull's part of it all. I don't know whether any of that's true. I know their websites look similar, their messages are similar, and they are designed to undermine Conservative candidates. It's not the Liberal Party. This is an orchestrated campaign of the left. Do I think government should be building new coal-fired power stations or nuclear power stations? No. I think government should get out of it. They should open the gates to other people that want to do it and provide them with investment security and certainty. Let me know what you think. Glenn says,
There's been an amendment in the Senate to bring back online poker, and I hear you're prepared to keep up the fight. If you are, then please tell me who to vote for in the upcoming elections to give us a sniff of a chance. You'll have 50,000 voters back on your side. Glenn, I support online poker as being carved out from online gambling. Certainly, there's an element of gambling because it involves money, real or digital. But, it's a game of skill. It's a craft. It's a sport, some would argue. And there are tens of thousands, you say 50,000, it could be more, people who enjoy online poker because as a game of skill and strategy against their colleagues. It's not a game of chance like roulette or the pokies or anything else like that. I play poker myself. I like it. I support its non-inclusion in the gambling ban, and we're going to continue to fight in that respect. I helped David Leinhelm, who is a senator who's now running somewhere else. I helped him get his inquiry up, and I attended it. It was fantastic. Vincent says he's a supporter of superannuation. It has many benefits, not only helping out individuals in their retirement, but it's poured billions into the Australian economy. There's a few problems with it. Here they go. All super funds charge a fee to administer accounts, which you expect covers the associated costs. Correct. The option of cash, you receive on average 1% lower than traditional bank term deposits. I've heard the argument that superannuation funds hold some funds for immediate call. However, most members are years from being entitled to call their money. You should be given the option of locking your money for a set term. All right, let me address that, Vincent. The answer to that is you can. You can. The reason most superannuation funds, you have to understand, when you go into a superannuation fund, even the biggest one, you can direct where you want your money to go. And if you choose the balanced option, for example, they'll have a bunch of money on call that they can move in and out of the market as they want to do. If you want your money fully invested into stocks or shares or something like that, you can make that decision as well. You can have it entirely in cash. You can have it in bonds, which are effectively term deposits. You can do all of those things. The problem is people don't understand superannuation. It's an environment, a tax-effective environment for saving money. It's not an investment in itself. So, point number two. Your question. If my money is invested in the bank, I'm eligible for Commonwealth Government guarantee up to 250 grand, yet my money in cash super funds is not guaranteed. Well, that's because your money in a super fund is pooled with everyone else's money to get better value and better deals, generally, even though you've got the ability to segregate your investments. And so that is what it is. It's an investment like anything else. You could, in some instances, start a self-managed super fund and deposit that money into a bank, if that's what you wanted to do, and you would take advantage of the government guarantee. But it goes through a third-party organization, and the funds are far too big. The guarantee from banks is only about individual accounts. Number three, as a small business person over the last few years, I've wound down, I'm 61, and because I still operate part-time businesses, I'm unable to call my super, and yet if I'd worked for wages and retired and gone back part-time, I could have called my super. This to me is totally unacceptable, unfair, and unjust. I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to accept that you at your word there, and there are circumstances where people can call their super if they've retired, And I think there is a thing called transition to super where you can continue to make contributions. Transition allows you to make contributions and withdraw as well, I think. Anyway, that's an anomaly. Let me ask about it and see what I can find out. Not that anything will be done before the election. I doubt it anyway. Richard says, what do you think of privatised healthcare? We currently spend over $170 billion on healthcare. Wouldn't it be better off turning that loss from taxpayers into actual revenue that can easily be fueled to fill in the gaps to reduce tax? Currently in America, healthcare contributes 10% to their economy. They lead the world in terms of quality of healthcare, innovation in healthcare, because of a huge profit incentive. Yes, that's true, but healthcare, private health insurance in America, can cost in the region of $20,000 a year. And if you don't have private health insurance, hospitals will refuse to treat you. You know, to be honest, I think our healthcare system is amongst the best in the world, because it's accessible to everyone. It's not perfect by any stretch. It is filled with rorts and demands and is consuming a massive amount of the budget. And I do think that ultimately people should be expected to wear some responsibility for funding things themselves. I know of people that go to doctors just to have a chat.
You want to know why you can't get to a doctor? Because someone books in every week to go there and just have a conversation. Doctors tell me that. And so on. There's a lot of overservicing, unnecessary expenses, but it's never going to be perfect. But having said that, I think people should opt to use the private system whenever they can and whenever they have the means in which to do so. But a universal healthcare system is something that I don't see changing in this country. Scott says, love your podcasts. Love your email already, Scott. Are the AC going to oppose the lower Labor franking credits tax will penalise self-funded retirees that have worked and saved for their future, and especially the small business and contractors that have built up franking credits to use in their retirement? Scott, the answer is yes. Yes and yes. Labor's scheme is a hastily cobbled together bunch of nonsense. And I'll tell you why it's nonsense. Even if you agreed that you should change, you know, the Peter Costello policy stance of refunding excess franking credits for low or zero income taxpayers, even if you agreed with that, then you can't agree that it should only apply to people who were on the pension by March of last year and anyone after an arbitrary date was under a different regime. I mean, taxation is meant to be universal, and so it would apply to everybody. And the other point about it is, and this is where you get to see through the ideological blinkers, this would mostly penalise those people who have self-managed super funds because they couldn't offset the franking credits. But if you're in an industry super fund, coincidentally, which funds the union movement and puts hundreds of millions of dollars into the pockets of directors around the country, most of whom are affiliated with the union movement, well, they'll be able to do it because of the way they're structured. So once again, independence, the ability to make decisions for yourself, is being attacked and undermined and eroded by a Labor government. I won't be supporting it. Scott's got a double question. How active are AC going to be in supporting Jacinta Price in a campaign to publicise Indigenous violence and make the Indigenous community accountable for taking responsibility and resolving the problem? Scott, Google, go to our website, look at the videos. I don't know how many years I've been on Paul Murray talking about this. You're asking me. It frustrates me. Ken says, here's a list of policies I believe should be a priority. Dissolve all agreements with the UN. Yeah, it's not a bad one. Abolish the Protected Species Act. But what would happen to those little frogs that are stopping dams and railways? Oh my goodness. Deport the whole family of juvenile criminals or revoke citizenship. Well, there's only certain times that can happen, but we've got a comprehensive policy on it, Ken. Conservatives.org.au. Mandatory 30 years jail for manufacturing importers. I believe you're talking about drugs, even though you don't say so. Because if it was only manufacturers of chairs, it would be a bit hardcore. Lock up traffickers till they disclose the persons in their operation. Confiscate all immediate family assets. You know, drugs are a scourge, an absolute scourge. And I think the penalties need to be stronger. I mean, how can you be smuggling 160 ecstasy or pills into a music festival and then not be imprisoned for it? It seems a bit odd. You could cause the death of young people by spreading this poison. Seems a bit weird to me. Mandatory electronic attitude adjustment for pedophiles. I don't know what that means, but and rapists as well as jail. Electronic attitude. If you're talking about electroshock therapy, I don't think that's happening anymore, mate. But I don't have a problem with chemical castration of pedophiles. I think that's a reasonable thing. Anyway, best wishes to you and your party. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Thanks for the email. Dear Corey, love your podcast and look forward to Wednesdays rolling around. Thank you. This is from Alan. One of my concerns is that the huge amount of overseas aid we pay out, especially to Middle Eastern countries. Don't know if you've ever thought about this, but the Middle East has been established with cities, ports and trade routes for thousands of years, yet Australia is only just 200 years old. In my opinion, the Middle East should be paying us aid. They should. Good luck with that. Look, you know, Australia's foreign aid, I'll abbreviate this, Alan, because there's a lot more to your email. Australia's foreign aid is simply far too much. We're giving money to countries to fight extremism, aka Indonesia,
who then spend, coincidentally, the same amount of money on fighter planes and attack helicopters and defences. We borrow money from other countries and then send it back to them as foreign aid. I mean, I understand aid is important, but not just unilateral stuff. Let's throw it out there so they can buy more Maseratis. Hello, Papua New Guinea. We're borrowing this cash from taxpayers of tomorrow and taxpayers of today to give to a bunch of nations that are crooked, corrupt, or organisations that are just bloated bureaucracies like the UN. It's a disgrace. We need to do something about it. So, Gwen says, good to hear how you defended Kerri-Ann Kennelly concerning her being called a racist for her true comments. Well, thank you, Gwen, and you've given me some more information about your eldest granddaughter who's worked in medical centre in Tennant Creek. And the problem is the government doesn't want to tackle this stuff. They say they do, but they don't. And that's why all of the money they throw in the Aboriginal communities has been squandered. Rick says, long-time supporter, newly paid member. Good on you, Rick. To touch on the Kerri-Ann Kennelly and Yumi, it's Yumi Steins. I call it Yummy Steins, but it's Yumi. More than ever, this highlights the importance of free speech and how paramount and vital it is for a successful democracy. The left simply branding people as racist due to lack of facts, personal backbone, or just wanting a cheap win, as you perfectly said on Sky News last week. You can tell why I'm reading this, can't you, listeners? As you perfectly said on Sky News last week, telling the truth is the new hate speech. How true is that statement? Thanks very much, Rick. I really appreciate it. Stuart says on the podcast, I particularly enjoy the history bites. Just want to make the comment, be good if you could grab a microphone or headset to record the show. The hands-free recording makes you sound distant and echoey. Though it probably sounds okay in a studio with headphones, when I listen in a vehicle or on public transport, the surrounding noise combined with the echo just makes it that little bit harder to hear. Well, thank you, Stuart. I'm still struggling with technology, mate. I bought this fancy kit. I was going to record everything through a Plum microphone, and I didn't have the right connection. So next week, it'll get better. It's always like that. Trust me, I'm a politician. Or I'm a podcaster, I should say. What else have we got here? Greg, we're going to finish on this. Greg says he'd like a harder line on drugs. You're well aware we have a drug problem in Australia that no government is interested in taking on. All you see in the media lately is talk about pill testing as if this is going to somehow stop drug deaths. What I would suggest is that Australia needs to adopt the drug policy used in Singapore, hardline approach, no slapping on the wrist and condoning of drug use. Imposing the death penalty for drug trafficking in Australia would not be popular. It would probably have to be dropped, but otherwise drug use in Singapore is non-existent. I'd be interested to hear your opinion on Australia adopting a more hardline approach, or if you think AC should adopt this policy. Greg, really good question. Firstly, I got to make the point that if you ask the Australian people, do you think the death penalty should be introduced? I think a majority of them would say yes. But I wouldn't be one of them. I would not be one of them. Because I think that sanctioning the state to take the lives of their own citizens is fraught with peril. Not only does it contradict my sort of right to life values, where I believe life, however dysfunctional it may be in many respects from the human condition, I believe that it's wrong for the state to legislate to take it. And that's from, you know, conception right through until natural death. I know the state is perfectly capable of making mistakes. I know the arguments that people are perfectly capable of making rational decisions for themselves, but I'm also acutely aware of how human nature is one where people overreach, they do it on purpose, they do it deliberately because there is evil in the world. And I also know there is hope and redemption for every person in this world. Hope of redemption, I should say, but every person should have hope. And the ability for redemption, the option for redemption, should be available to all, no matter how grievous their offence. Now, I don't doubt the passion and the disagreement that many of you may have in my respect to my comments about the death penalty and the right to life and the sanctity of it. Share them with me. Send them to me. We can have a bigger discussion about it next week if you'd like to. send me your emails, corey@coreybernardi.com. Thanks for tuning in. This has been your say on the Weekly Dose of Common Sense.
If you want common sense restored to Australian politics, chip in at conservatives.org.au.
Listeners, that's all we've got time for. And in fact, we've gone over time once again. But let me finish by saying thank you and give you a bit of an apology. I said I'd have these cracker interviews because I've got the technology to do it, and I do, but I just haven't got the right connections to plug my existing equipment into the new equipment. Call me a Luddite. I've been called much worse. But most of all, I call myself a conservative, and I want to bring common sense back to Canberra, and I want you to help me. Tuning into this podcast, sharing it with your family and friends, and sending me your comments, corey@coreybernardi.com, will help us to bring common sense back to Canberra and to the rest of Australia too. So thanks for tuning in. I look forward to having a chat next week.
Welcome to the home of the conservative revolution. This is your weekly dose of common sense.